Hello and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. My name's Phil Whelans, and with me again this week is Benji Lanyarda.
Evening.
Jim Grant can't make it this week. He is trapped in the snow out in the snowy wastelands of Sevenoaks. But actually, Jim, by disguising himself as a high-class prostitute, was able to get a flash drive with Kieran Dyer's Christmas message to the fans on it. So we'll be listening to that a bit later in the podcast. We've been very lucky with these. In a Julian Assange WikiLeaks manner, Benji, last week we managed to get Luis Boamorte's Christmas message, an early draft of that. I imagine it's changed since then.
No, I've heard, yeah.
And the week before we had Kovacs' emails to his mum. We intercepted those.
That's right. Well,
back in the Czech Republic.
Assange just sort of scrambled the wires the world over, and all sorts of things are turning up in my inbox as well.
That's right. It's excellent. It's excellent. So what we've got is Kieran Dyer's internet message, the first draft of the script of that, which Jim managed courageously to get dressed as a high-class hooker. We'll also be talking about the Blackburn game at the weekend, and then we posted a question to many of you on the Facebook group and email group. What would we like for Christmas? What would we like to buy Hammers players for Christmas? And what would we as fans like to receive at Christmas? After that, we'll look forward, if forward is the right word, to our little run of fixtures over the Christmas period. And so, we'll kick off Blackburn. Benji, what did you make of it?
The first half was like a sort of sadomasochistic classico.
I watched it on an illegal internet feed.
Same here. Yeah. Obviously, no, a friend of a friend watched it on...
Out of guilt, I had myself in at a police station, and they said I'd suffered enough and let me off. Many games were cancelled due to the weather, and in a tragically impacted by the weather, that game went ahead. I actually blame the weather for that game existing.
Well, that's quite right. There was very little football that got played over this weekend, and we sort of towed the line, really.
Absolutely. We didn't play any football. First half, just dreadful, wasn't it?
It was very bad. I wonder if people had, like, aliens had landed on the earth and seen the first half of that game and been told that this was the top flight of English football.
You know that game of billiards where there are no pockets in it and you just have to play cannons? Cannon tables, and there's actually just a completely oblong table and you don't get balls in. But that's what that game was like. It was like you didn't actually have to score goals.
Absolutely. Very, very few passes that was actually found their intended player. The commentators were occasionally saying, oh, well, you know, the conditions are very difficult, slippery pitch. I was like, No, you obviously haven't seen us play that much recently.
We've got nothing in the last third, have we, really? Even when things picked up in the second half, there were just moments of ineptitude in the last third that were sort of jaw-droppingly bad. The shine's come off Piquion a bit.
I agree.
To have lost a bit of form, doesn't
he? There's something slightly inevitable about that.
But he
wins everything in the air, which is fantastic.
Which is great, yeah.
But he had sort of two or three pretty wild shots during that game that made you kind of think, oh, hold on, actually, is he a bit crap as well?
Yeah. He's not a natural finisher. I think we've said that once or twice. Jim's made that point.
Look at his record. He's a kind of one goal in three game striker at best.
But the last ball, the final ball from everyone was awful, and Piquion was particularly sort of guilty of that. There were the two incredibly optimistic shots into the side netting when he could have squared it once to Barrera and once to someone else.
That's right. Actually, to be fair, just his first shot into the side netting, Boamorte slipped him in a lovely ball, which Boamorte seems to do one in ten games.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Yeah.
Just as you're about to give up all hope whatsoever, he kind of does that.
He pulls something out the bag. Yeah, it's bizarre.
And then the two other moments of striking ineptitude. First of all, when Benny McCarthy came on, he got put through on goal, and then I couldn't quite work out whether he'd kicked his left foot with his right foot, or whether his calves had just turned into kind of jelly, and he just kind of wobbled to the floor.
He stood on the ball. I think that's what happened. I think if it's the same one, I think he was put through with a fantastic ball from Parker, and then he attempted to control the ball. He stood on it.
Yeah.
He used to have the excuse that he couldn't see his feet, but he has trimmed down quite a lot now, and he just stood on the ball, and you're like, oh, come on, Benny, man. Yeah. Surely there's an element to which it's like riding a bike. I know he hasn't played for a long time, but there's got to be certain basics that stay with you, your whole career. And it was, you know.
He came on as well with that kind of slightly magnanimous smile after he'd been booed by the Blackburn fans, which I was sort of semi-surprised with. I don't really understand what their beef with him is.
No.
But then you kind of... It crystallised everything that I thought about Benny McCarthy, which he is just in the kind of tail end of his career, picking up a wage packet, big smile on his face, doesn't realise actually there's something serious going on here called football.
Yeah.
Where you're required to put one foot in front of the other and be able to control a ball and score a goal. I mean, just one would be all right.
The last third of the pitch is just, there's no teeth, no cutting edge at the moment. Piquion also got put through and had the chance to knock it on one and just passed it back to one of their defenders instead of the couple of players.
Tell you who does love the first third of the forward third of our pitch is Kieran Dyer. Who loves just standing there, kind of wandering around, hoping for the ball to come to him at some point.
Yeah.
And there's this rule, there's this offside thing. Someone needs to tell him about it.
Yes, that's been mentioned. He got caught offside a lot, didn't he? That's normally Piquion's trick because he's so slow coming back.
Yeah, it was like trying to emulate Nicolas Anelka the early years where he used to just stand there until someone told him about the offside rule. To be fair to Kieran Dyer, he spent so long not playing that he probably does need to just brush up on some of the rules.
Absolutely,
every now and
then, I think he had to get bought one of those kind of PlayStation Wii type games just to remind himself of what the sport was like.
Fair enough.
Hasn't played for a long time, It was not the result we needed, really. There were a lot of these. If we were playing well, you would take a point away at Blackburn in the same way that you'd take a point away at Birmingham. But we need to put in a kind of extraordinary performance at some point, because even a point a game is not enough now
to
survive. And there's the formula, isn't there? The survival formula for Grant in the short term is one win out of three games. So now he's got two games in which to win.
Which are, so Fulham away and then
Everton at home. And it's another example of Sugo, isn't it? With their bizarre incontinence of just leaking stuff to the press, Assange, like that's been leaked, isn't it? Because it's clearly that an insider says that Grant's got three games to save his.
It raises the horrible spectre that they might have someone lined up as well, which raises the absolutely disgusting, appalling, earth-ending possibility of Big Sam.
I know. It's extraordinary. I mean, I just can't see that happening.
There would be... When I heard about that, when I first heard... Well, in fact, within 5 minutes of hearing they'd been sacked, it suddenly hit me, and I generally got a physical shudder. Everything's just gone.
Yeah. And we're back. Benji, just what were you thinking of for the same?
Well, I was thinking about the idea of Big Sam actually even being offered an interview at West Ham. And
is that what that gap was? You thinking about that?
I think
you thought about that for a long time.
There was a brief gap in the space-time continuum as the world came to terms with that possibility. But I was actually
thinking, are we in an alternative universe now where Sam is the manager of West Ham?
Where the Academy of Football is run by Big Sam.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, if that actually happened, I would maybe be that mad raving lunatic outside Upton Park when the Sky cameras go there with placards saying, and I was trying to think of something sort of witty or clever to have on my placard, and all I could come up with was just no.
No. Well, we want some angry students, don't we? We want some angry students.
Absolutely.
To
we need to channel their ire. But there are those who say, and it exposes this new argument, which is: would you rather stay up with someone like Big Sam, or go down and rebuild with someone more exciting and interesting? And I'm definitely in the latter camp.
Me too.
I just don't see how, you know, in the long term that can be a positive thing at all. We know the kind of football he plays, and it's criminal.
Yeah,
and it's horrible. And actually, a huge amount of Blackburn fans were pretty happy, even though it was weird the way he went.
Oh, they were. Yeah, absolutely. They definitely were. I think the thing that you can't forget is that time when we finished 10th under Alan Kirbishley, and the fans were actually booing wins at the end of his tenure. Booing wins, too fucking negative, all that stuff. dun 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 dun, dun, dun I think was chanted by the fans of the game that we drew, I believe. So opposed were the fans to the style of football that was being played, and it was extraordinary because, you know, in a sense, I don't have the most sort of tactical acumen in the world, especially since we sort of watch from the short end where everything is compressed and you can't quite see how tactics kind of work and apply from the side. That just the intangible difference between a team that plays in a shit style and a team that plays in a non-shit style is actually huge.
And having said that, though, Big Sam is known to be one of these very modern managers, like Alan Pardew or something. He spends a lot of time on Prozone, and he's got all these sort of, this huge backroom staff, and yet still ends up playing horrible long ball football.
I mean, the other thing he has done is he brings good players in. The kind of part of that Bolton renaissance was when he got hold of an end of his career, Djorkaeff,
and Okocha.
And JJ Okocha. Two players at the end of their careers, but that were sort of dead good.
He's got some odd scouts around and odd contacts. He's always been a bit of a sort of championship manager. Like, certain signings that you never quite saw. Do you remember he got, I think he got Fernando Hierro from Real Madrid at the end of his career?
He did get some.
He managed
to
get Sal Guardo to
Crespo.
To Blackburn. Crespo.
Yeah.
Crespo. No, not Crespo.
No, I don't mean Crespo, do I?
The Jardel.
Curly haired guy.
Jardel went up there was the.
The guy who was captain of Real Madrid for a while.
Campo.
Yeah. Not Crespo. Yeah,
he does
Campo.
Sort of, he does pick them out of nowhere sometimes.
And, you know, there are still players he's got that are sort of quite good. I don't know if he bought Pedersen to Blackburn, but I like Pedersen. A bit lazy, but he's got, you know, he's got something about him, Morten Gamst Pedersen. Like him or loathe him. And everyone loathes him. Joof is a good player. He's a decent player.
He's a Big Sam player, isn't he? He's just a little shit who he sort of has taken along with him two clubs running. And
he's sort of, they've adopted that new tactic of really roughing up a goalkeeper during corners.
That's right.
And getting away with it. I think there was a goal that Blackburn scored under Big Sam that
where Joof just stood in front of the keeper,
but also sort of backed into him. And it's like back to that kind of barging the goalkeeper into the net. Almost.
But do we want that horrible football? No, we don't.
We don't. We
and if there's
don't.
One thing West Ham fans can do, it's biting our nose off to spite our face, and I'd quite happily take that alternative.
Absolutely. In a few moments, we're going to look at some emails and Facebook messages. We asked, what would you like for Christmas as a West Ham fan, and what do West Ham players need for Christmas? If you have any views on this, or anything else you'd like to talk to us about on the next couple of podcasts, email us your views to hammertime@playbackmedia.co.uk, or you can get all our links for Facebook, Twitter and iTunes at West Ham Podcast, all run together.com. Like Ben Murtagh, Christopher Edel, and Matthew Cruyff are all following us on Twitter.
Continental.
And you can get our iPhone app as well at bit.ly/West Ham app. Talking of the internet, Jim picked up a flash drive in his cleavage. As I said, Jim dressed as a high-class hooker and managed to get a flash drive off Kieran Dyer, which contains his Christmas message to the fans. And I think it's a rough first draft, but let's give it a listen. I won't try and do the voice. I tried to do the voice with Luis Barmorte last week. I became a kind of
it was wonderful.
Furious Mexican bandit. we'll just go my own voice with Kieran Dyer. Hello and season's greetings from me, Kieran Dyer. This year, I'm spending the holidays in hospital. I was given a pullover for Christmas, knitted for me by Carl Fletcher's wife. But I didn't realise that the neck hole was too small. And as I tried to pull it over my head, my skull shattered. It was a million to one freak accident, which means I'll be out till March. Only yesterday, me and some of the lads were in another hospital, visiting some sick children. Meeting those less fortunate than you really makes you appreciate how lucky you are. And meeting some West Ham players made these sick children realise that there are people far less well off than them. It really put a smile on their faces. In fact, one child laughed so much his respiratory system failed, and he was taken into intensive care. Then it was Christmas dinner for the playing staff. We had turkey with all the trimmings. Luis Boamorte offered to carve, and it was fun watching him hack repeatedly at the bird, stabbing at it again and again and calling it a whore. He left the room crying, and we found him later on in the dressing room, inside his own locker. No one knows how he managed to lock himself inside. He's a really bubbly character. And that's true, isn't it? Luis Boamorte is a bubbly character. Christmas dinner was delicious, but unfortunately my throat swelled up and I went into anaphylactic shock and had to be taken to hospital. They ran allergy tests on the whole meal and discovered that I am allergic to plates. It was a one in a million freak accident, and it means that I'll be out till April. Before the meal, I bumped into Mark Noble, who was wrapping presents. I said, "Mark, that's my present to you. It's already wrapped. You don't have to wrap it again." And we all laughed. He's a really bubbly character. Well, that's true. Mark Noble is a bubbly. Not very intelligent, apparently. I think that's the upshot of that bit.
Bubbly, though.
Bubbly. Hugely bubbly character. Just then, one of the directors came in with a big sack of gifts, all dressed up in a bright red outfit with white fur trim, bucket boots and a big belt. That's right. It was David Sullivan, just dressed normally. "Hello, Mr. Sullivan. How are you?" I said. But he wouldn't answer. So we got a TV camera and a microphone and pretended to plug them in. Right away, he told us all about himself, everything he'd done, everything he was thinking, and that's satire. Robert Greene wrote that bit. Uncle Avram wanted to give out the presents, so he asked Mr. Sullivan to give him the sack. "Oh, I'll give you the sack, all right," said Mr. Sullivan, and laughed. And Uncle Avram laughed too, and we all laughed. Then Mr. Gold came in and said, "Oh, yes, we'll give you the sack." And he was laughing too, and Uncle Avram was laughing. And then Karen Brady came in, and all three of them were laughing, and they were going, "We'll give you the sack, all right," and making throat-slitting gestures and pointing at Uncle Avram. And Uncle Avram was laughing and pretending to be dead, and we were all laughing and laughing. They're really bubbly characters, all of them. Then it was time to pull our Christmas crackers. After I'd pulled mine with Freddie Sears, I had to be rushed to hospital to have my arm reattached. It was a one in a million freak accident, which also means I'll be out until May. After that, Matthew Upson led us in some Christmas carol singing. Unfortunately, we couldn't hear him. He was drowned out by the sound of dust settling. Then he realised that he was just thinking the words and not actually singing them out loud. He's a really bubbly character. Anyway, I'd better sign off now. Merry Christmas and a happy new... Oh, I've just stabbed myself accidentally in the throat with the pen. Yours festively, Kieran Dyer.
Very good, very good, Kieran's, Kieran.
That's Kieran Dyer's Christmas message to it. I think that's lovely, touching Christmas message.
It's beautiful, beautiful.
So, talking of Christmas messages... I think it's time to hear what people want for Christmas. Have you got anything there, Benji?
It's from Paul Harrison. It's quite succinct. Kovach, a cyanide-laced hooker.
Ooh.
which is...
That's probably the only way to get cyanide into Radoslav Kovach's mouth.
Yeah, right. Oh, dear.
when they throw on those Lucozade bottles for all the fans, he runs and gets a drink from an optic at the side of the side of the touchline, doesn't he?
And the rest of their team, they're... P45s. Except, there's an asterisk there saying, except Parker and Green, who's actually been outstanding, I think, even with a leaky defence in front of him.
Yes, he has been very good. Talking of Kovac and Scotty Parker, we were saying earlier, I know Rob Chapman has been suggesting very tentatively that part of the kind of Noble... a Parker axis, part of that problem is the same problem that England have with Gerrard and Lampard. I argue that, no, it's not the same problem.
It's a very different problem.
It's a very different problem. But I can see the point he's making in the in clear sort of demarcation of jobs. If you say to Kovac, you are in front of the back four, you don't go anywhere. Scotty, you can sort of roam and create.
Well, this is talk of us being linked with Sidwell. And I'd actually much prefer Sidwell doing that job than Parker. Some people in the press are saying that, you know, suggests that we're maybe looking to life without Parker, which I don't necessarily think it does. Well,
no.
Bloody hope it doesn't.
No, no.
But Sidwell would certainly do as a upgrade on Kovac.
An upgrade, yeah, slightly better kind of stopper than him, yeah. Mm. The other midfielder we're linked with a few actually, but Ireland, Stephen Ireland.
I'd definitely take Ireland.
Yeah.
I still wonder whether or not having someone like Ireland would shackle Scott Parker, because Scott Parker is not I still don't think he's a natural attacking midfielder. I think he's a defensive midfielder who happens to occasionally do really quite excellent things going forward.
Yeah.
And I still can't quite work out whether we should do anything that means that he is sort of slightly... shackled to that defensive midfield role, which he does brilliantly, and then someone else has the responsibility of going forward.
You can see that that's partially been the problem with Scott Parker's career, hasn't it? I mean, I think if he had been the absolute bee's knees and the 100% finished article, he would have stayed at Chelsea. And similarly, some Newcastle, though they were not a strong Newcastle at the time, he was happy to leave and come to another club. Do look at the YouTube clip of when he was playing for Newcastle, and his tackle on Joe Cole is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Someone's put it to music, and it's sort of repeated and repeated. The cartwheel in the air,
absolutely
Joe Cole does.
Totals him, yeah.
Yeah, he does. Cole goes into the air and does a 360 kind of Catherine wheel style turn in the air. Such is the force of Tiny Scott Parker's tackle.
And that is fantastic. And he just does everything with such gusto that they were saying that on Match of the Day this weekend. There's a suggestion that is he exhausting himself? He's carrying so much on his shoulders. Basically, he is our play.
He is. Yeah,
we're Scott Parker United.
The heart
at the moment
of the team. Yeah, absolutely.
That you know, you kind of worry that he might knacker himself. Also, there is a I think it's absolutely tragic that he's not anywhere near the England squad at the moment. It's a travesty. The fact that they've got someone like Gareth Barry doing a defensive midfielder role in there when he's a shit defensive midfielder and he's just a pretty average footballer, where Scott Parker is clearly superior. However, I do worry if Scott Parker gets the call, because I think one of the reasons that Parker has been playing so well this season is that he's playing for his England place.
Yeah, he's a big fish in a small pond.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think sort of better movement in front of him would improve some of the weaknesses in his game. Like sometimes his passing is a bit awry, and he doesn't play with his head up all the time. Though occasionally he puts great balls to him. I mean, the ball through for Bicky on was brilliant.
Mm. And he does, and for our goal, I mean, it was kind of inadvertent. Burton, that the ball escaped to Stanislas, but it was his industry.
Tenacity,
got there in the first place.
Absolutely.
And Stanislas again proved his knack for scoring a goal.
Yeah, yeah.
He's someone who I actually think he was our best player, even though he only played for about 20 minutes. He was the one who was the least crap out of everyone.
He also can. I mean, his snapshot the weekend against City was on target, not like a kind of Vicar Binner rosette or just some of these incredibly strange shots. Barrera doesn't seem to have a shot on him. None of these.
What happened to Binner this weekend? Was it?
I wonder.
I mean, I haven't really heard any conclusive reporting of his injuries. Yeah.
Ben Paul says, what do we want for Christmas? A miracle. Actually, a striker who can score must be a priority. Let's look at what the squad strikers need for Christmas. Cole needs some confidence, but preferably in exchange to a club that will pay silly money for him. Picky on, calmness in front of goal is one of the worst finishes I've ever seen, says Ben. Abinna just realised he's the worst finisher I've seen. I think he'd like not to play on the wings for Christmas. Hines, a chance, just give him a chance. Benny Mack to be put out to rest, pay him off with a year's subscription of K4IC.
It's talking strikers, we've been linked this week with Adebayor.
Yeah.
Which is an odd
one. He's not going to come.
I don't think he's going to come. He'd much rather sit on his arse and do nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's just too, again, he's too unreliable. He's too kind of eccentric. He's too much of a one-chop type striker. You know, we don't want someone who's going to conjure up a kind of magical goal every now and again.
To be fair,
we need a sort of Kevin Davis. We need just someone who sticks the ball. Kevin Phillips at his peak, someone like that.
I'd definitely take Adebayor if he'd come here, but I don't think he would. I think that's the problem.
I think we have to take
as many as we can.
Well, that's sort of what happened last transfer window, wasn't it? Because we were in such a precarious position that we just had to take the dregs at the end of the transfer window, and that's how we ended up with Mido, the only one we paid for, Benny McCarthy, and Ilan.
That's right, he got a couple of crucial goals.
He got a couple of good goals, I'm sure we can be a bit more creative and try and get some. I mean, there must be someone in sort of League One who's just banging in goals every week, even if it's just for half a season, to come to West Ham and go, your job is to be in front of everything and Picky on behind him, put maybe play a kind of three up front, but just, some guy at the sort of point of that arrow
who scores
and just go, your job's to stick the ball in there, because there is some terrible, I mean, Ben is right, this sort of finishing, I think he's overstating the case for comic effect, but he is sort of right. Picky on, you know, at the weekend was very poor in front of goal. Occasionally he's good.
Yeah, I agree. I am getting to a stage now where I'm trying to find things funny rather than terribly depressing.
Yeah.
and I think actually I am also preparing myself for us going down now. And we've said it a few times on this podcast, it won't be the end of the world. Also, it's quite encouraging to see, I mean, for a long time the Championship has actually been very strong.
Yeah.
This year, the last few years, it hasn't been that brilliant. And QPR have been slipping up recently. I know this sounds awful thinking about this already, but I generally something has kind of, over the last 3 years at West Ham, nothing's been settled. Very few players who are your kind of bankers, bar Scott Parker, really, let's face it, just Scott Parker. And I think when you lose that kind of sense of team, and it kind of seems as if all these positions are getting wobbled around, and you get random right-backs in from Blackburn, Jakobsen comes in, when you're getting these random loan signings for 6 months, nothing is solid. It's almost as if the kind of spine and the soul of the team just hasn't been there for a long time. It's kind of time to start again, perhaps.
Well, the financial sort of meltdown, it's been said that spending a year in the Championships would just be a disaster for us, especially if we spent 2 years in the Championships. But I wonder how true that is. I think you just have to cut your cloth a bit. You get a lot of players off the wage bill, which would be good because they'll just go to other clubs. And like we did under Alan Pardew, rebuild. But I think you'll need a Pardew-type manager, someone to really tinker and build a team. Pardew's work, and we've said this thousands of times, he was like one of those gold prospectors, sort of picking up a load of silt from a riverbed and sieving it through. There'd be players that you only saw for one game and then they were out again. You know, Adam Nolan, all those guys, David Connolly, all those. Well, actually, they were Rodabys, weren't they? David Connolly was a Rodaby, Adam Nolan. But a lot of Neil players came in and went out, really rapidly.
But then he settled.
Until he found his team.
And there is something, there's something very important in that. I look back to our team, sort of our turn of the century teams, the sort of the Di Canio years.
And
for a while you could say our right winger is Trevor Sinclair. We could say, Frank Lampard plays in the middle, we've got Di Canio up front. About sort of 8 of the 11, you pretty much knew
Pick
who they
themselves.
Were. And that was for a period of 2-3 years. There was something consistent there. And you can say the same thing for a lot of the better teams in the Premiership. And I think it's been such a kind of chaotic mix of players over the last 3 years, and I guess managers as well, and ownership. I think starting again would be fine.
And financial mismanagement and just mistakes with players. Savio, I mean, we go over this quite a lot on the podcast, but they're just terrible. Sort of not replacing Bellamy, Savio, the players on high wages, panic selling to at least make a bit of money, so keeping Upson but selling Collins because we think we might eventually make more money from Upson, or that Upson's a better player, should have kept Collins probably. Selling Etherington to make some money back.
That's a weird one, because I thought he was finished really as a player, and of course he leaves and starts playing brilliantly.
Sometimes that has to happen though, doesn't it? A player kind of reinvents themselves at a new club. They're not going anywhere at the club they're at.
And the manager thing is important. It does, seeing Pardew back at Newcastle does make you realise that even though he is a real David Brent of a manager, he's got all these kind of catchphrases, and he's always talking about 110%, all this kind of rubbish. But he is a manager that speaks the player's language, because he's a little bit thick. But that is quite valuable, actually, because he's got something about him, and yet he's not on a different plane like someone
absolutely.
Like Avram.
Absolutely. I mean, it's Glenn Hoddle, those type managers, Rhoda probably very similarly, is
Keegan,
a bit too bright to be a football manager.
And so
they're trying to sort of mould the players' personalities and make them better people. Fuck that. They kind of go, I'm a great person. I get 30,000 quid a week to play football. I'm driving a baby Bentley. I mean, that was a good thing about Venables, was that Venables is not thick, but he is kind of a Jack the Lad. All liked him because they're Jack the Lads as well.
It's Redknapp. It's the same deal. Redknapp, I'm ashamed to say.
I'll put an arm around the boy. That's Redknapp. Redknapp puts an arm around.
And Van der Vaart came out the other day and said, essentially, before games, we don't get sat down with statistics and charts. He kind of says, get out there and enjoy yourselves.
But he's got a big checkbook to do that with. He can buy Van der Vaart. Van der Vaart became available, and Levy just went, Van der Vaart's become available. And Redknapp went, well, let's have him then. Yeah. And they just bought him, snap opening of a checkbook, and suddenly they've got that great player there.
I mean, football management does not need to be some kind of cerebral art. I think you look at the great thinkers in the game over the years. Do you remember Igor Olsen at Wimbledon, who came in with his whole new ways of thinking? And he actually died on his own. The one exception is Wenger, but that is an exception. I think in our current state, we actually need a Pardew. We need a kind of a real snappy young manager who's going to speak their language.
I think this is the thing about changing the manager at this point in the season. This bunch of players, we were saying it towards the end of last season, there's a kind of toxic relationship amongst this bunch of players. They're a dysfunctional group of players, and they didn't turn over enough players in the summer to get rid of the kind of that stink of failure that hung over them. And in fact, the three they bought in, Picciano, Binner and Jacobson, were all good and came out and were sort of better than the rest, and possibly with the exception of Scott Parker. When they, from their first game, because they weren't infected by that can't-do attitude they had, you're just never going to beat a team that's better than you, and then it's a fight against a team that's level with you or sort of worse than you. I mean, in a way, the kind of sort of celebrations when we beat Wigan a couple of weekends ago, well, we were supposed to beat them. And, you know, we are bottom, but they are rubbish, you know, and we had a harder start to the season than them. But, you know, this is the kind of, yeah, we're really getting somewhere now. We managed to beat Wigan at football. And it's going, right, did you really think that if we hadn't beaten them? And that was that save our season thing as well, wasn't it?
That was, wasn't it?
If we win that one game, everything will be right. No, it won't. And, of course, we went and sort of like, you know, really capitulated against Manchester City and got beat 3-1 and never really looked like winning that game.
To be fair with Man City, I think they probably have got the best squad in the league. And I think when they come to Upton Park, you kind of forget.
They weren't good, though, I didn't think.
They weren't good, but with that sort
Touré was all
the three of them in the field, Touré, De Jong and Silva were fantastic. And you do get that sad thought every now and then, I do anyway, that the Premiership is kind of maybe leaving West Ham behind a little bit, especially when you see teams like West Brom playing lovely football, Blackpool playing lovely football. Blackpool are a credit to the Premiership. You know, they are. I mean, there was a great interview with Ian Holloway recently where he said that there was a real changing point in his managerial career. Even though he does talk a load of crap a lot of the time, very funny crap, but he said that for a long time he used to go out and think about how best not to lose the game.
Yeah.
And he said as soon as he abandoned that and went out there and just went for it, things turned up. And that's not a surprise. It's something that we can learn from, I think.
Our first season under Pardew in the Premiership was
exactly
played,
like
played
that.
Really good football.
And
because
it was momentum.
We were the underdog. And none of the players were in with a sort of sniff of kind of playing for their countries at the time. You know, a couple of them were kind of under 21s, like Riococca, Noble. You know, they were on the fringes of the, you know, the youth setup of the national team. But they weren't. You know, we've got a lot of internationals and ex-internationals in our team, but they are journeymen.
They're just journeymen. Old internationals.
If they go down, they've all got a club to go to. You know, someone will have everyone. You know, that team could just be disassembled now, and they'd all go to other clubs.
There's no one there you have any real affection for. Like, obviously, there's Parker. There's Green to some extent.
Yeah.
I think Abina is sort of forging his way into the hearts of West Ham fans.
Upson has been with the club for quite a while now, but there's no real affection.
He's been
for
our
him.
Captain for quite a while.
Well, and also, I mean, Jim makes a good point that someone who refuses to sign a new contract because he thinks he might be able to get a better job. Making a captain of someone that actually wants to go is
very
insane.
Odd.
Is insane. And I think possibly that might be, because my question is, what can a new manager do? I think the problem is with the players. I think Grant actually does seem to be able to change things occasionally, especially at half-time, which makes you wonder why he can't get them to come out and really play in the first half, though occasionally he can. He is more tactically astute than Zola was, but there's the same problem that existed under Zola in that they just have a kind of comfort zone where they go, we sort of lose to teams that are better than us. We don't worry about it too much. I mean, they're sort of better than us. Whereas some of those teams like Holloway, Holloway's team like Blackpool, want to go out and, you know, do a bit of giant killing.
It does make you think, what on earth happened in that Man United game?
Absolutely.
That's where it becomes just so inexplicable when you realise we've got it in us to occasionally play absolutely brilliantly.
Absolutely. I've got another email here from Gary Prince. He says, could you give a special mention to the fans that went up to the game on Saturday? To
Blackburn? Good on them, yeah.
Absolutely. Good for them. I mean, that must have been a nightmare. I wonder if the motorways were, you know, the snow must have.
Well, they were huddling in the upper tier, sensibly, as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Well done then.
We went up as my son Owen, he says, was West Ham mascot for the day. Bit of a treacherous journey, but got back safely to Kent. There were people that it took 17 hours to get back. Someone on the Facebook group said it took them 17 hours to get back from the game. Got invited into the dressing room before the game. All our players are happy to sign a shirt and say hello to Owen, 6-year-old Owen. Noticeable that Avram stayed outside the dressing room whilst we were in there. and the tactic board was blank except for a list of the subs' names.
Just go straight to plan B.
So if your name's not on this list, you're playing. It's kind of reverse psychology.
That is good to know that the tactic board was blank.
I resisted the temptation to give the lads a rousing rallying cry. Bloody hell, Gary, call yourself a fan, as the music in there was pumping out a bit loud. Oh, Calvin Harris, I'm not alone. I remember, I don't know if there's a message there. I've got to say, Matt Upson was brilliant with my son, taking time out to talk to him and help him run onto the pitch. I think maybe your son was helping Matt run onto the pitch. Missed a couple of players in the dressing room, notably Kieran Dyer, except he was in a separate room being kept alive in an oxygen chamber or something. Did overhear Paul Groves in the corridor talking to Avram Grant about someone being sick, but don't know who. And sorry, no other gossip. If you do read my email out, can you try and do so without swearing too much? Cheers, Gary. Because 6-year-old Owen probably might be listening to it. Well, we didn't insert swears into the reading of that email, did we?
I certainly didn't.
No, I thought we've been not swearing too much. We haven't sworn too much this...
It's family-friendly.
This is a very family-friendly podcast.
As is Matt Upson. See, there is a role for him, maybe. He can be sort of family and friends liaisons, but just that's about as aggressive as
he gets. It's a sort of gentle, non-threatening quality.
He's a lovely...
That welcomes strikers into your penalty area.
Absolutely. Take him home to your mother. He's a lovely guy.
Yeah, he's a sweet guy. Sweet guy. Have you got any other Christmas present emails there?
Kieran Dyer needs some glasses so that you can see
offside. Yeah, that's for
McCarthy needs crutches, and the team needs 3 points, and I think I need a few beers. That's from Jack in Middlesbrough.
Yes, well, all of those are true, and let's hope that Santa brings that. We'll come back after we've played a couple of the Christmas games. I know that Rob Chapman has written a Harry Potter spoof, Scotty Parker and the Deathly Hollow squad of ineptitude. Jim, I believe, is also working on a Christmas pantomime thing, so perhaps in the new year we'll come back
with
it. It's
going to
be a sort of, it's like a little arts, it's like the late review, show, isn't it?
The truth is, as West Ham fans, we kind of have to entertain ourselves.
We do, that's right. We have got, over Christmas, we've got Fulham away on Boxing Day, haven't we? 28th, I believe, is Everton at home.
Everton at home, yeah.
And then Wolves is kind of January.
New Year's Day.
It's New Year's Day, that's right. And so the formula is one of the next two has got to be a win, Fulham away or Everton at home. God, if you had to pick. I mean, we touch wood, we sort of do quite well at a Fulham away.
We have.
They're not the Fulham they were under Hodgson.
No.
We might get something.
We'll see. If we need at least 3 points from Everton or Wolves.
Yeah.
I don't mind if it's one or the other, but we got to get points out.
No,
I've got to. I mean, Wolves on New Year's Day is going to be big. It is big.
Yeah, really it is.
Big.
It is. And remember how we collapsed against them last season?
My God, that was a low.
1-3, wasn't it? It was disastrous.
Yeah, horrible.
It was one of our worst games.
That was where you were just absolutely certain Zola was going to get sacked within 10 minutes at the end, but
it didn't
happen, yeah.
No. Let's speculate on a result for the Fulham game. Fulham away, what do we reckon?
I'll take a draw.
Yeah. I might go for a 0-1 to us.
I'm going to say 2-2.
2-2 draw.
Score draw.
So a relatively high scoring game for a team that can't score. Actually, they have trouble scoring as well, don't they?
I think the negatives will clash and create a festival of goals.
An interference pattern of onion bag bursting. All right, well, that's it. That's it for this Hammer Time. We'll see you after Christmas, probably. This is it from me, Phil Whelans, and Benji Lagnardo.
Good evening.
Come on, you Irons.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at westhampodcast.com. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on this podcast, please call our marketing partners Sports Revolution on 0207 580 2850 or drop them a line at info@sportsrevolution.co.uk.
If you like this podcast, you might also want to try our general football podcast, The Whistleblowers, another Playback Media production available on iTunes or at thewhistleblowers.net.